But first, in April of 2016, Scottsdale residents Sarah and William Fox were whitewater rafting in the Grand Canyon when Sarah fell out of the front of the raft and was severely injured by a propeller. The couple filed a negligence suit against the rafting tour operator, Wallapai River Runners, which is owned by the Grand Canyon Resort Corporation, a company incorporated by the Wallapai tribe. In the case, the tribe argued that the kind of tribally owned entity was subject to protections of tribal sovereignty. But this week, the state Supreme Court ruled that the Foxes could go ahead with their suit against the tribal corporation. So to break this ruling down and tell us what it means for Arizona's tribes, I spoke more about it with Robert Miller, a professor specializing in tribal law at ASU's Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law.
It's not an enormous change in regards to courts across the country, but when tribes create corporations to do business for the tribe, to make money for the tribe, to help these poverty-stricken communities, they expect these corporations to be what are called an arm of the tribe, and they're working solely for the tribe and to help create wealth for tribal peoples and for tribal governments. So any limitation on their authorities and rights here is of concern to Indian nations across the country. And of course, this case is for Arizona, the 22 federally recognized tribes in our state.
How has this functioned up until now? These sort of tribally owned entities were also protected from lawsuits from cases like this one because they were sovereign?
The Arizona Supreme Court had decided two cases, the Shelley case in 1971, the Dixon case in 1989, and a lower court in 1983. They had held that tribal corporations engage in commercial activities, even off reservation, were protected by sovereign immunity. Mm-hmm. And for your listeners, all that means is that the government cannot be sued in its own courts. This goes back to Old English times 1,000 years ago, 800 years ago, that you can't sue the king in their king's own court. So this is a standard protection for governments, for the Arizona state government, for the federal government, and for Indian tribal governments.
Right. So if this had gone the other way, say, would these plaintiffs, the Fox family here, would they have had any claim against the Wallapai tribe?
No. They would have had a claim against, and their suit does continue against a non-Indian company that booked this trip for them through the Colorado.
Gotcha.
And they would be allowed to sue individual Indian tribal citizens for the individual's liability. The U.S. Supreme Court reemphasized that point just 2 years ago.
Right, right. So in looking at the state Supreme Court's decision on this, what's your interpretation of why it went this way? You said other courts are seeming to do this right now. Is this sort of the new wave of how we deal with tribally owned entities?
Yes, as tribes have gotten more involved in the business world, these questions have arisen in several states. I've been long teaching a case out of the highest court in the state of New York from 1998. And that also set out a multi-factor test like this, which the New York State Court reaffirmed and added to in 2013. The California Supreme Court in December of 2012 decided a Miami case. It's called the Miami Nation case. And the Arizona Supreme Court relies quite a lot on that California case. So creating these multi-factor tests to answer the question whether a tribally owned commercial corporation entity is a part of the tribe is being addressed far more often across the nation.
So this is, you're referring to the opinion sets out six factors for Arizona courts to consider when they're determining whether or not one of these tribal entities has sovereign immunity. And in this case, the Wallapai tribe will be able to go back to the lower courts and try and prove that a little further, right?
Yes, the trial judge, the Superior Court judge, had dismissed this tribal corporation's motion to dismiss the case. He had denied the case, and the Arizona Supreme Court affirms that decision. But as you said, the last paragraph in the opinion says, well, the trial judge should now reconsider this in light of these factors we set out, and this tribal corporation now has the opportunity to present all sorts of evidence whether they meet these six factors mm-hmm. that the Arizona Supreme Court have delineated.
So I want to ask, what's next then? Will it open up all tribal entities to liability to similar cases like this?
Oh, yes, absolutely. All 22 federally recognized tribes in Arizona will be paying great attention to this. Their legal departments will literally, I mean, I know what lawyers do now. They're reading this opinion, looking at how their own tribal corporations are organized and operated, and they'll be trying to make sure that they meet this Arizona Supreme Court test. I teach economic development in Indian country, and tribes have been told for the past 40 years that they should always create corporations. They should set up separate boards to operate these corporations so that the politically elected leaders are separate from the day-to-day business decisions and the economic decisions that have to be made. And so for 40 years, tribes have been told to create corporations just like this one here. But now this court and the California Supreme Court and a few other courts have now use that almost to strike against tribal sovereign immunity. They say, oh, if there's a corporation, then it's a separate entity from the tribe. So it really, an economist would say this is an inefficient decision and that this will hurt the overall economy, not just of tribes, but the operation and smooth operation of business relations between tribes and other governments and tribes and individuals.
And then lastly, Robert, on the other side of this, how does this affect people like this family who was injured in the Grand Canyon, or, you know, anyone who goes to a casino or something like that and may be, you know, in contact with a tribally run entity?
Well, let me make this point. Almost every tribe that has a casino has waived their sovereign immunity for people that go there and are injured. So tribes are well aware of when you invite the public in, there's got to be some sort of recourse when someone slips and falls in a casino, etc. Now, there is a concurrence in this case by Justice Bolick, and he does bring up this issue you're talking about. And he is echoing what the U.S. Supreme Court and four justices on the U.S. Supreme Court have said. They are concerned about a tribe operating commercially and off reservation and an unknowing innocent person like the foxes here being injured. But I honestly believe that most tribal governments have taken account of this already, certainly in the casino setting you just mentioned.
All right. That is Robert Miller, a professor specializing in tribal law at ASU Sandra Day O'Connor College of Law. Robert, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.